Demons, unclean spirits, and evil spirits in the New Testament are the spirits of the dead and dead spirits of the Rephaim, who were among the Nephilim clans in the Old Testament. The biblical data couldn't be clearer. Welcome to The Narnian. I'm your host, Josh Robinson, and on today's episode, I'm going to be talking about demons, and I'm going to be spending some time going into the third chapter of my upcoming book called Reenchanting the Unseen, and so we can go ahead and get right into it. So what role do demons play in the intricate web of spiritual beings? Now, whenever we look at the Bible, we see that it employs various phrases to describe these malevolent entities. In the New Testament, the terms evil spirits or the singular form evil spirit are used in reference to demons. You can find that in Matthew 12:45, Luke 7:32, 8:2, 11:26, 19:12-13, and verses 15-16 in chapter 19. Additionally, in Matthew 8:32, the Greek term daimon is utilized to refer to an evil spirit. Another expression, unclean spirit, is also employed to characterize these sorts of beings as well. You can see that in Matthew 10:1 and Mark 6:7-13. In his book titled Demons, What the Bible Really Says About the Powers of Darkness, Dr. Michael Heiser notes it this way. While the overlap of the terms and phrases is transparent, that the terms are interchanged does not mean that unclean spirits has no special nuance. Whalen has marshaled evidence to suggest that unclean spirits was used in Second Temple Judaism specifically to draw attention to the origin of these evil spirits as the result of an unnatural mixture and the subsequent emergence and contact with the corpses of the dead Nephilim. While this viewpoint might be unfamiliar in our current era, it held significant prevalence in the ancient world. Throughout Genesis 6 and other Bible passages, we confront a startling reality. Angelic beings, known as the sons of God, departed from their rightful domain and entered into unions with mortal women, Jude 1:6. This unholy alliance gave rise to a breed of giants known as the Nephilim, who are also referred to by various names in Scripture, such as the Mighty Men of Renown and the Anakim and the Rephaim. The term Nephilim in Hebrew translates to fallen ones. Advocates of what's called the Sethite interpretation of Genesis chapter 6 often cite this term as evidence against the Nephilim being giants. According to this view, the Nephilim are seen as representing the godly lineage of Seth, which fell through intermarriage with ungodly descendants of Cain. This perspective portrays the passage as a cautionary tale about the consequences of the righteous and the unrighteous being unequally yoked. However, this interpretation faces several significant challenges. The foremost issue is that it reveals a lack of familiarity with the broader biblical context. While Genesis 6 may not explicitly describe the Nephilim as giants, which is debatable, other passages in the Bible do indeed affirm this connection. A compelling example can be found in Numbers 13, 32-33, where we encounter a report given by the Israelite spies who were sent to survey the land and its inhabitants. That text says this, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, are part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. While Genesis 6 does not explicitly mention the stature of the Nephilim, it becomes evident from Numbers 13:32 through 33 that the Israelites associated the Nephilim with giants. This gives us insight into the worldview of the Israelites and how they would have understood the Genesis 6 narrative. This is also the reason why the translators of the Greek Septuagint, the LXX, translated Nephilim in Genesis 6 as giants, or gigas in Greek. They were well aware of the lexical usage found in the rest of the Old Testament. An intriguing detail in the text is the mention that the sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim. But who exactly are the sons of Anak? Deuteronomy 1:28 sheds light on this, identifying the sons of Anak as the Anakim. These individuals are described as people who are not only bigger and taller than the Israelites, but who also reside in cities large and fortified to heaven. Deuteronomy 9:2 further reinforces this, describing the Anakim as a people great and tall. In Joshua 11:21-22, we learn that during the Israelite conquest, Joshua successfully eliminated the Anakim from the hill country of northern Palestine, destroying their cities. Consequently, there were no longer any Anakim in the land, except for those remaining in Gath and Ashdod. Notably, as the biblical narrative unfolds, we encounter the familiar account of David's battle with Goliath from Gath in 1 Samuel 17. Goliath, a giant measuring 6 cubits and a span, belonged to the Anakim lineage that Joshua had left alive in Gath. Thus, the notion that the Nephilim were not giants simply lacks support. This conclusion can only be reached by isolating Genesis chapter 6 from the broader biblical narrative. The Nephilim are indeed fallen ones, but not in the same way that we find in the demythologized interpretation proposed by those who hold to the Sethite view of Genesis chapter 6. Ezekiel in Ezekiel 32:27 refers to the Nephilim as warriors fallen from long ago who went down to Sheol with their weapons of war, and they placed their sword under their heads and their shields were on their bones, for the terror of the warriors was in the land of the living. In essence, the Nephilim are fallen warriors whose spirits descended into the underworld of Sheol, accompanied by their weapons of war. This concept connects to the Rephaim data, which further enriches the narrative. So who were the Rephaim? The term Rephaim appears 25 times in the Hebrew Bible. In Deuteronomy 2:9-11, we encounter a narrative about the Israelites' journey through the desert. During this time, the Lord instructed Moses not to antagonize the Moabites, as the land that they had been given was given to them as a possession by the Lord. There, Moses writes, "Then the Lord said to me, 'Do not harass Moab, nor provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the sons of Lot as a possession. The Emim lived there formerly, a people as great and numerous and as tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they are also regarded as Rephaim, but the Moabites call them Emim.'" Here we see that the Rephaim, or the Emim, as they were called by the Moabites, were as great and as tall as the Anakim. And like the Anakim, the Emim were regarded as Rephaim. We actually have a story in Scripture of a Rephaim king named Og. Og was the king of Bashan, who was also a giant. Deuteronomy 3:1-11 gives us some more information about him, stating, "Then we turned and we went up the road to Bashan, and Og the king of Bashan came out to meet us, he and all his army, for the battle at Edrei. And Yahweh said to me, 'You shall not fear him, for I have given him and all his army and his land into your hand. And so you will do to him as you did to Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who was reigning in Heshbon.' And so Yahweh, our God, also gave Og, the king of Bashan, and all of his army into our hands, and we struck him down until not a survivor remained to him. And we captured all of his towns at that time. There was not a city that we did not take from them. All of their fortified towns with high walls, gates, and bars, apart from very many villages of the open country. And so we destroyed them just as we had done Sihon, the king of Heshbon. We destroyed utterly each town of males, the women, and the little children. But all the livestock and the booty of the towns we kept as spoil for ourselves. And so we took at that time the land from the control of the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, from the Wadi of Arnon up to Mount Hermon. The Sidonians called Hermon, Siron, and the Amorites called Seir. All the towns of the plateau and the whole of Gilead and all of Bashan up to Salakah and Edrei, the towns of the kingdom of Og and Bashan. For only Og, king of Bashan, was left from the remnant of the Rephaim. Indeed, his bedstead, it was a bedstead of iron. It is in Rabbah of the Ammonites. 9 cubits is its length, and 4 cubits is its width, according to the cubit of man. So Og was a large man. He was much larger than Goliath of Gath. Commenting on this, Dr. Michael Heiser states, "For an ancient Israelite reader with command of Hebrew and a worldview that included the idea that supernatural opposition to Israel had something to do with pre-flood events in Mesopotamia, several things in this short passage would have jumped out to them immediately. None of them are obvious in English translation. First, the most immediate link back to the Babylonian polemic is Og's bed, which in Hebrew is Eris. Its dimensions, 9 by 4 cubits, are precisely those of the cultic bed in the ziggurat called Etamenanki, which is the ziggurat most archaeologists identify as the Tower of Babel, referred to in the Bible. Ziggurats functioned as temples and divine abodes. The unusually large bed at Etamenanki was housed in the house of the bed. It was the place where the god Marduk and his divine wife, Zarpanitu, met annually for ritual lovemaking. Scholars have been struck by the precise correlation. It's hard not to conclude that as with Genesis 6:1 through 4, so with Deuteronomy 3, those who put the finishing touches on the Old Testament during the exile in Babylon were connecting Marduk and Og in some way. The most transparent path is, in fact, giant structure. Og is said to have been the last of the Rephaim, a term connected to the giant Anakim and other giant clans in the Transjordan. Marduk, like other deities in antiquity, was portrayed as superhuman in size. However, the real matrix of ideas in the mind of the biblical author may be derived from wordplay based on Babylonian mythology. Second, Deuteronomy 3 mentions Og's reign over the city of Edrei. Joshua 12:4 through 5, which looks back on the battle with Og, refers to him as the king of Bashan, living at Ashtaroth and Edrei. These terms, Ashtaroth, Edrei, and Bashan, were theologically loaded terms for an Israelite, and even for their neighbors who worshipped other gods. Ashtaroth, Edrei, and the Rephaim are mentioned by name in Ugaritic text. The Rephaim of Ugarit are not described as giants, but rather they are quasi-divine dead warrior kings who inhabit the underworld. Here, Heiser brings to light several fascinating insights from the ancient Near East. In ancient texts from Ugarit, the Rephaim are depicted as quasi-divine dead warrior kings who inhabit the underworld. In other words, the Rephaim are depicted as demigods, who are the result of gods and men intermingling. This idea is clearly in sight in Genesis 6, where the divine sons of God intermingle with the daughters of men and produce the great culture builders, the mighty men of renown. This isn't the only place in the ancient Near East where this idea comes up. For example, in the Epic of Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh is described as bringing back home a story from before the flood. He builds walls around the city of Uruk and the holy treasury called the Temple of Heaven. In other words, he was a culture builder and a mighty man of renown like Nimrod, who was also a mighty one, or Geborim, on the earth, Genesis 10:8. Interestingly, he is also described as two-thirds god and one-third human. He is also a giant in height, being 18 feet tall. Just like the Rephaim, he was a giant who was part divine and part human. This was spelled out explicitly during the Second Temple period in the Dead Sea Scrolls. In the scroll called the Book of Giants, which is 4Q530, it says, "And all his colleagues entered, and Ahia explained them what Gilgamesh had told him, and Hubabis roared with judgment, and it was pronounced on him. And the guilty cursed the princes, and the giants rejoiced over him, and he was cursed again and accepted it. Then two of them dreamed dreams, and the sleep of their eyes fled from them. And they rose and opened their eyes, and they went to Shemyaza, their father. Then he told a story in the congregation of their colleagues, the Nephilim. Here, Gilgamesh, the mighty semi-divine king of Uruk, is mentioned along with the Nephilim and fallen angelic beings mentioned in the Book of Enoch, who was the father of the Nephilim named Shemyaza. He's mentioned in 1 Enoch 6, 7 through 8. Again, this is an Israelite apologetic against certain religious ideas that were present in the ancient Near East about gods and mighty culture builders that were venerated among ancient people. The second thing that is of interest that Heiser mentions is that the Rephaim in ancient Ugarit are depicted as dead warrior kings who inhabit the underworld. This is the connection point with demons in the Bible. To the surprise of some, we learn that the Bible also speaks of the Rephaim not just as giants, but also as dead warrior kings who inhabit the underworld. As the story of the Bible unfolds, we learn that there are several names that are easy to pass over in English translation. The names they're given in the Bible are the dead, or departed spirits, or the shades. We see David speaking of the Rephaim as departed spirits in Psalm 88, 9-13. There he says, "My eye languishes from misery. I call upon you, O Yahweh. Every day I spread out my hands to you. Do you work wonders for the dead? Or do the departed spirits rise up to praise you? Selah. Is your loyal love told in the grave? Or your faithfulness in the underworld? Are your wonders known in the darkness, or your righteousness in the lands of the forgetfulness? But as for me, I cry for help to you, O Yahweh, and in the morning my prayer comes before you." The Hebrew word for departed spirits who are situated in the underworld of Sheol here in this psalm is Rephaim. Isaiah also speaks of the dead spirits in Isaiah 14:9 and Isaiah 26:14, stating, "Sheol below is getting excited over you to meet you when you come. It arouses the dead spirits, or the Rephaim, for you. All the leaders of the earth, it raises all the kings of the nations from their thrones." The next text says, "The dead do not live. Dead spirits, or Rephaim, do not rise, because you have punished and destroyed them, and you have destroyed all memory of them." Job also speaks of spirits of the dead who are beneath the waters of the earth, who tremble below. He writes, "The spirits of the dead, or the Rephaim, tremble below the waters and their inhabitants. Sheol is naked before him, and there is no covering for Abaddon." Again, the Hebrew word in all three of these texts for dead spirits and spirits of the dead is Rephaim. This is where the notion that demons, unclean spirits, and evil spirits stem from the remains of deceased Nephilim. Demons, unclean spirits, and evil spirits in the New Testament are the spirits of the dead and dead spirits of the Rephaim, who were among the Nephilim clans in the Old Testament. The biblical data couldn't be clearer. In the intricate web of spiritual beings within the biblical narratives, demons play a distinct role that ties back to the ancient accounts of the Nephilim, the Anakim, and the Rephaim, and their connection to fallen angels. While the prevailing contemporary belief is that demons are fallen angels, a closer examination of the biblical data and related literature reveals a more nuanced perspective. The origin of demons is linked to the pre-flood events described in Genesis 6, where angelic beings, referred to as the sons of God, entered unions with mortal women, resulting in the birth of giants, also called the Nephilim. The biblical narrative and other ancient texts suggest that the Nephilim were not only giants, but also powerful warrior kings who held a quasi-divine status, being born from the intermingling of divine and human elements. The Rephaim, another group of beings mentioned in the Bible, further enriched the narrative. The Rephaim are depicted as deceased warrior kings who inhabit the underworld. They are referred to as the dead spirits, departed spirits, and shades in various biblical passages. This connection between the Rephaim and the spirits of the dead provides insight into the nature of demons, often characterized as evil spirits seeking to harm and possess humans. The intricate web of spiritual beings, including demons, Nephilim, and Rephaim, demonstrates a complex interplay between divine and human elements, leading to the emergence of malevolent entities that haunt the spiritual realm. The biblical texts offer a unique perspective on the origin and nature of demons, rooted in ancient beliefs and narratives that provide a deeper understanding of these spiritual beings.